with your life. Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they call themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We sashay. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them. for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. I hope that you had a great weekend. I hope that you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, better do, can do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, you just did it anyway, because you know it's the right thing to do. You get it done. That's the kind of people we must become, people who get it done regardless. Great weekend. The Power Summit was outstanding. I'll talk about that later. The fifth annual Power Summit. Got some feedback from some folks who were in Philadelphia at the ASCAC conference, ASCAC, the Association for Study of Classical African Civilization, had their meeting in Philadelphia. And any and all the other things that were going on in your world and around the world. It was a great weekend. Of course, this is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen live, you can always go to timeforanawakening.com. And as you scroll down, you see the red, black, and green Africa with the lion imprint with the Africa imposed on it. That's Time for an Awakening. And there you will find previously recorded programs. They're all dated and titled. Also to blacktalkradionetwork.com for previously recorded programs. On Mondays on Time for an Awakening, it's this evening, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, Acres of Diamonds, Community Affairs Programming. And then Let's Buy Black 365 right after that program. Also, too, you can view Let's Buy Black 365 on Facebook. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Tuesdays. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's program. I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, 8 p.m. to 10. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, and I know it's going to be a good Us Lifting Us radio program this Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, with Brother DJ, Baba Kambizi, Sister Nanana, Sister Shay, Baba Thurman, myself, and all the other members of Us Lifting Us. And we'll talk more extensively about what was happening this weekend with the Ulu Power Summit. Friday. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, That's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it's not Brother Oshie's African Perspectives. It's Revive with Sister POC from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern, it is time for an awakening once again with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. Periodically, I read what Sister Marimba, our niece, sent me on African sovereignty, an interpretation of the Nguza Saba. Of course, the Nguza Saba is the, the Nguza Saba is the principles for African unity, the seven principles of the Kwanzaa. And these principles should be instilled into our everyday lives. And so she sent this last year before Kwanzaa. And of course, Umoja is the first principle, which is unity. And a Pan-Africanist interpretation of it is the Pan-Africanist vision of African people throughout the world joining forces to fight for African sovereignty and to build an African world order. We need sovereignty, brothers and sisters. We need to plan and do for ourselves, independent of anybody. Kujichagulia, self-determination, African people defining ourselves and determining our own destiny as a sovereign people. Nobody influences us. Nobody tells us. We do for ourselves. Ujima, collective work of responsibility, African people working together, being responsible to and for each other and accepting the common system of accountability. We must be accountable to one another, and we must take whatever responsibilities that we are tasked seriously and get them done at appropriate times or on time. Ujima, cooperative economics. Creating economic cooperatives based on the concept of African familyhood, interdependence, interrelationships, and community, national, and global African unity. Whatever we do, wherever we are African. We are one African. And we work and support one another together. NIA, purpose. African people sharing common goals that determine our commitments and guide our choices and decisions. This gives purpose to our lives and to our work, and it tells us why we were born African. Kumba, creativity, to think with African minds and to create our own from our African center. When we practice this principle, we no longer imitate non-Africans. We make our own way. Imani, faith. To believe in the vision of African sovereignty and to have the passion and the will, the heart, to bring it into being. As Marcus Garvey said, what it up, you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will. If we have the will to do it, it can and will be done. If we have the will to do it. April 14th, the 21st Century Black Survival Conference will take place here in Atlanta at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Doors open up at 12 noon. Of course, the Shrine of Black Madonna is located 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard here in Atlanta. And three areas of emphasis and focus are spirituality, culture, and survival. The spirituality component will be dealt with by the master teacher, Baba Oshua Kwesi, African historian and spirituality, the origins of the Bible and Quran. And if you haven't checked out Oshua Kwesi, go to YouTube. In fact, you can go to YouTube for everything. Culture. The culture component is going to be Baba Mwalimu Burudi, a warrior's character. A warrior's character. What we must be as men and women to change this condition. The survival component will be the irritated genie. He will talk about African survival in the 21st century. This conference, Saturday, April 14th, here in Atlanta, is a must attend. As I've been saying, we'll be here next year, 2019, 400 years. 400 years we have been here in America. And we really need to collectively discuss what next. Because to me, in fact, I said it at the conference on Saturday, you know, I ain't talking about the Black Panther movie. I like the movie Get Out because that's what the deal is. Get out. We need to get out of here. When we assess our situation and what has happened to us and continues to happen to us, we need to get out. That's why this program is dedicated and committed to African independence, African self-determination, African liberation, and African sovereignty. Also, too, We Buy Black. Check out WeBuyBlack.com for everything you need from American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. Check them out. Also, too, another conference coming up at the end of the month is Republic of New Africa. The Republic of New Africa's conference coming up in the five states that they had talked about way back in the 60s. The provisional government of the Republic of New Africa was South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Because when you look at those five states, the predominance of our people are still, and some of our people have moved back to those states. That is March 29th to April 1st, the Republic of New Africa. And I'm going to try to get Brother Jamoke in here to talk about that in the next couple of shows, couple of programs. The NC2A tournament is happening. Last Friday, I talked about my disdain and disgust of that whole process, of how the NC2A makes billions of dollars off the athleticism of American African. In fact, once again, that piece has said, March Madness is a stirring reminder of what made America great. And that is making tons of money off the unpaid labor of African people, of African young men, making billions of dollars. And they have a thick book with all these rules of what you cannot do in the NC2A, while those around are doing young people who have particular skills, whether it's in the arts or whatever that might be, can go ahead at any age and exploit that and make money off of that. But if you play basketball well and you're in the university system, if you play football well and you are in that university system, the only thing you can do is go to school and play sport. And the reality is, they hardly go to school because they practice all the time. That's why I proposed that if you are in one of the five major conferences, like the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Big 12, Southeastern Conference, Southwestern Conference, about five or six conferences that are really big, where the schools are really big, and that's the focus. I'm not talking about UMBC. That's right, baby. UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, upset number one Virginia. And Virginia was the number one team in the whole tournament. Upset number one, big time. I mean, they wasn't close. It blew them out. They were hitting, they shot phenomenally. They shot terribly last night. It was I don't even think they scored 50 points. They were terrible last night. Boy, was I pulling for them. But that's how that goes. But the other night, they made history. So from now on, you will know about UMBC, the Retrievers. That's what they have. I said, what are they saying? That's Retrievers. Oh, like dogs, like Golden Retrievers, the Retrievers. Okay. But, man, they put on a show. I don't know if you noticed it, if you did watch the tournament. All throughout the tournament, every game in all the regions, the floor pretty much looked the same. Because of all the billions of dollars that they have their own floor. They have when they get the venue, say, for instance, I think it's coming here to Atlanta, and it probably will be at the Phillips Arena, wherever venue it's going to be. They have their own floor. They bring their floor in. As you can see, they had the March Madness, which, of course, they probably trademarked. March Madness, and you see the word March Madness, and you see what looks like brackets coming to a point, which, of course, that's another, I don't think they could have, I don't know, you could trademark anything. Hell, I remember Pat Riley trademarked three-peat, and anybody who did a three-peat, which, of course, Michael did it twice, and the Lakers did it once, you know, you can make money, three-peat. So you could do that any, but they have the floor in all these places. And the only thing you know where the game is at, where the scorer's table is, that's the middle and mid-court. You see whatever the city it is, Dallas, Nashville, San Diego. These are some of the cities that the first round. And then, of course, you'll see first round. If it's the first round games, Thursday and Friday. Yesterday and Saturday, you've seen second round. Thursday and Friday, you'll see Sweet 16 on the floor. Saturday and Sunday, you'll see Elite 8. And the following Saturday and Monday, you'll see Final Four. They have their own floor because they have so much money. It is a nonprofit organization, and they can spend money unbelievably. I don't know what Emirates being paid. Damn, you're trying to say his name. I see his face. I want to punch him in the face. Along with Dabo Swinney, I want to punch them cats in the face. Man. Because I hate the fact that they know they're using these people. They're using them. We offer a great opportunity. They have a slick commercial. I don't know if you saw their slick. Of course, if you watched the game, you saw their slick commercial where the kids are dribbling the basketball. And they're from all walks of life, all genders, all whatever. And they're saying, if you have this talent and you have the ability to go to school, the NCAA will provide the opportunity for you. One thing I can never argue would be ludicrous for me to do so, that there's not opportunity in this country. In fact, I could never argue what an individual's commitment can do for his or her success. I can't argue that. It's happened. But there's never been and never will be equal opportunity. And given that reality, discrimination and racism persist. Why some make it, some don't, some play that game. I would always say this, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe there's a real African man, conscious, who can really survive in corporate America. Because in corporate America, in corporate America is where all the things that happen to us happen from. And you are up in that, and you know what they're doing, what they're talking about, how they're going to do this, how they're going to do that. And because you're there, you're part of what they're going to do. You're just as guilty by association with those who do the dirt. And just like any other men, coaches particularly, who defend this system.
They ain't going to say nothing because they benefit. Hell, when you talking about these coaches make millions. They make millions. Not only do they get, not only are they the highest paid state employee, more so than governors, lieutenant governors, any politician, more so than any person at the university, maybe a tenured professor, maybe the chancellor, the president, whatever, none of them make as much as the football and basketball coach of a major conference school. None of them. Nick Saban in Alabama makes $11 million. But wait, that's not all. He has a deal with one of the apparel companies, shoe companies. He gets paid by them that his players have to. They better wear these products. He gets paid to make sure that they do. But, well, no, it's not all. That's not all. He has a radio program. He has a television program. He has all kinds of other commercials or endorsements. Multiple revenue streams aside from the $11 million a year. John Calipari inked a big, huge contract with the University of Kentucky. And I give Calipari a little bit of prop because a couple of years ago, he had all those players, all those ones and dones. The one and done means that they come into school because they have to. What a deal the NCAA and the NBA struck with each other. What a damn deal. That's right, the NBA, the National Basketball Association, said, no, we don't want these kids coming right out of high school like Kobe and Moses Malone and Kevin Garnett and LeBron James has done. No, we want them to go to school first. We encourage you to go to school first. Now, understand, you don't have to go to a university or college. You can go overseas like Brandon Jennings did. He went to China or someplace and played that 1 year and came back. And now he's back with the Bucks too. That's interesting. But you got to go to school for that 1 year. Simmons, who plays for the 76ers. And Simmons didn't even go to class. He was at LSU. So that's why he didn't play the second half of the year, because he was ineligible. He didn't even go to class. He knew what a farce it is. And, of course, his school didn't even make the tournament. But, of course, Simmons is going to be one of the best players in the NBA as years go on, especially when he develops better offense. But the point is, they struck that deal. And so a guy like Krzyzewski, maybe they don't like it. Of course they don't like it. They would love to keep a player for 4 years. Very seldom does that happen, particularly to a top-notch player. The last top-notch player that I can remember that played 4 straight years was Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan could have went out early, but he played 4 straight years at Wake Forest. Very seldom. 2 years sometimes is the max. They play 2 years and they're gone. Hell, they shouldn't play 1 year. If they're that good, they should go ahead and earn the money. Because if they got hurt, or something was just like the brother, they drafted him in the NBA. It was symbolic. It was ceremonial. Because he was developed a disease. Then there's one brother who got hurt even before he got a chance to go to college. And he was hailed as an outstanding prospect. So you see, I rail against this. I hate it. I hate the NCAA. And the fact that we don't have any real leadership in this country, that to hell with the politicians. They have proven. To hell with the religious community. They also have proven to be weak. We need to develop an independent cadre of leadership that calls into questions anything that happens for us as a people, and it is that we recognize is not good for us. We challenge it. This cadre of leadership should be state nationwide. People that are part of that group of leadership should be a voice from the people. Say, yes, this brother, this sister. Properly vetted. We come together, and whatever problems that there are, we try to address them nationally and then ultimately globally. Because I would love for that cadre of leadership to go to the continent with a group there. And then also that cadre of leadership comes from out of the diaspora, a segment of diaspora brothers and sisters, all meeting to, I'm going to tell you, I can't wait to for the second half of this program to talk about what I experienced at the Power Summit. Outstanding things that are going on. That's our problem. We don't know what's happening. In fact, we think nothing's happening. We think everything's the same old, same old. No, brothers and sisters, it is not. There are things that are happening. And there's going to be things that will continue to happen for the betterment of African people, because if it doesn't, we are doomed. And though many of us believe that we are doomed, I don't. Although I may speak, and it sounds like doom and gloom, but no, I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that this whole NC2A thing will be eventually changed. Too many people are talking about it in light of the scandal that happened when some of the players took money from agents and those who work in AAU. Because the reality is this thing needs to change, and there needs to be something done. And not just like when Shabazz Napier said, man, I'd sometimes go to bed hungry, there ain't no food. And then what did NC2A do? They gave a special per diem that you can go buy some more food. Okay, that problem solved. You can now get some more food. I don't know, you know, if it's at the cafeteria, whatever it is, whatever. It is chump change. It's crumbs. It's crumbs off the big ass table of the NC2A. They just scrape some crumbs, just shut you up. Like I said, and I think one of the things that really challenged that's why I think it needs to be challenged more when Ed O'Bannon saw his likeness in that NC2A, because they feel that they own everything about you. You put on that university jersey, even though it had your name on the back of it, possibly, but even if it didn't, but you put on that university jersey and they own you, and they sold that to EA Sports and you didn't get a dime. So when Ed O'Bannon seen that, and he's seen it directly as his likeness, no doubt, his movements, his left-handed shooting, all of that, he won. And I'm saying we will win when we make this challenge to the NC2A. Just another stepping stone for us. We will win. Man. But hats off to UMBC. UMBC. The first, and it has happened in the women's game. It happened many years ago. And so I was fortunate enough to see both of them. In fact, I often said, I know it's going to happen eventually. I just want to be alive when it does happen. And bam, it happened. And it happened because of this. Virginia was a great defensive team. Offensively, they were not. They lost two games during the season. Well, most teams did at least lose two games. And they were really strong defensively. But on that night, on Friday night, unbelievably, UMBC was on fire. Them cats couldn't miss. what's the, I can't remember the brother's name now. Man, he was 10 out of 12. What about six trays? Even this one where he got fouled and he just continued the shot. You know how you just throw the ball up high in the air? He threw the ball up high in the air and it came down wet. Splash. It didn't count, but it had the crowd oohing and on. He just put on a clinic. He was on fire. Everything they did, they were two, three steps ahead of Virginia. The reality is, better offense beats good defense every time. There have been some good defensive players I've seen torched. Walt Frazier. T.R. Dunn is supposed to be great defensively. I've seen that guy get torched. Because sometimes you just can't stop a player who is on their roll. And that's what happened with UMBC. They were on a roll as a team. They made every right play. They moved the ball. There was nothing that little Puerto Rican guard was killing him. The brother was killing him. I mean, he was hitting shot after shot. On the women's side, I can't remember how long ago it was, probably about 15 years ago, Harvard, with a sister that played for them, her name will come to me, Allison Feaster. She did what I saw Cheryl Swoops do. Put the team on your back and just lead them. I saw Cheryl Swoops do it with Texas Tech to the championship. She put that team literally on her back. She was killing that tournament, beating Ohio State for the national championship, Cheryl Swoops. Although Allison Feaster's team, Harvard, lost. They didn't think they even went to the final. No, I think they lost the next game just like UMBC. But they beat Stanford. They beat the number one seed, Stanford. In this case, Virginia was the number one overall seed. They were number one in the whole tournament. That even makes it even deeper. Not just a number one in a region. They were number one overall. There's only two teams left that are number one now. That's Kansas and Villanova. And, I could care less. I don't really have a team that I cheer for in this tournament. Not really. My thing has always been, as long as it ain't Duke or Kentucky. And when Duke and Kentucky play, yuck. I hate Duke, hate Kentucky. Hope they both lose. Don't care. Love to see a team, you know, just like last year, Gonzaga against North Carolina. Love to have seen Gonzaga win the whole thing over North Carolina. So we'll see. We'll see as it approaches in the next 2 weeks. Like I said, this weekend it's Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. And you'll see it on the floor. You'll see. I don't know if they have another floor because, I mean, all it is they have about whatever number of floors they have in each region, and they have just like fat heads that you can put on your wall. It's the same thing. They can pull that up and put down whatever else they want to put down. But they bring their own floor. That's how deep it is. I remember when they started doing that, it wasn't the floor. They just put those stencils down, you know. And they would have the big blue NCAA logo, big, right at the midcourt or on near the free throw line extenders in that area. You know, big blue NCAA. But because of all the money, they have their own colorful floors. You know, if you've seen the game, you'll see. You'll know. Yeah. So, the NC2A. Give me a call if you want to talk about that or anything else you want to talk about. I'm saving my critique of the Ulu Power Summit till after the hour. Hope some of you have a chance to to chime in at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. And you can talk about that or anything else you want to get off your chest or want to have some discussion about. You know? Yeah. I really enjoyed this summit this weekend, and I got some word, like I said, about the ASCAC conference, and I listened to Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, and Brother Richard attended the conference in Philly and talked about it last night, you know. But what I've always asked ASCAC to do, and I will continue to do it, wish I had the money to make it happen, is to develop a curriculum. Develop a curriculum of study for our people that we implement outside of the educational process, the formal education process of school, whatever school that might be. Just like Sunday school. If you are a Baptist, Sunday school lessons are taught across the country, maybe literally around the world, I don't know, possibly. But I know across the country, if you're Baptist, there's a Sunday school lesson that is being taught the same in Atlanta as it is in Houston, as it is in Dallas, as it is in L.A., Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, Miami, wherever. That's the lesson for that day. We need to develop something on that magnitude and implement it nationwide. And it should not just be for young people. It should be a curriculum developed also for us older people, adults, because we don't know. Many of us don't have a clue, don't have an idea of who and what we are and what we have accomplished. We believe, because this Caucasian has made us believe, that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, of any worth, of any notoriety. Even when the Caucasian was throughout Africa and saw great wonders, he didn't attribute it to the indigenous people. It was like some other Caucasian came here and did this, or some aliens came here and did this. And some of us think that that mentality is over because that was, you know, in 18, 1700, whatever. No. That mentality is pervasive to this day and will be, because that's who and what they are. That is their mindset. But we keep holding out hope. We keep wishing and praying. It's just like the NC2A. That will break only when we break it. Believe me, I would tell you right now, that NC2A could be broken tomorrow if all those brothers who, I mean, listen, every team that played this past Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, if you had a chance to glimpse at any of them, the predominant number of people, particularly playing, I ain't talking about on the bench. I'm talking about playing, because you had some teams that have five or six brothers, five on the court, a couple on the bench, along with five Caucasians. But I'm talking about the people who make the impact, the people who make the team go, brothers. And what if all those brothers said, hey, that's it, on the football field, and on the basketball court, that's it. We ain't playing no more until we straighten this usury system out. Until we figure this usury system out, that's when we'll play. That's when we can come to some kind of understanding, like I proposed, where, I mean, you know, I mean, all these stuff, of course, greater minds than myself. But I thought about this many, many years ago, that you offer each player a advanced degree when their playing time is over. They have a 4-year span of playing time. And after that time, they can take that degree anytime after that time is over. Maybe that person does make it to the NFL or NBA. And maybe they get injured. Maybe they have a long career. But anytime that player wants it, it is there for them because of the sacrifice they made to make all that damn money for that university and that conference and that system. So you have that. And then you also get paid. And the money is held like in an escrow. And you can borrow from, you can take from that escrow. Say, for instance, it ain't going well back home. Gas bill needs to be, utility bill needs to be paid. Mortgage needs to be paid, or whatever. You can take from that to give to your family. Because you have a dorm room, you have meals, and so forth provided. But what it is that you are like an employee of that university because you are providing tremendous amounts of money. And so now you can practice with ease. You can play those games. And once your playing days are over, you can go ahead and focus in on your education and your preparation. Like I said, Josh Rosen, the quarterback from UCLA, who is rich, his family is rich, but he said himself, playing NCAA football at this level is very difficult to be a student with all the things that you have to do. Richard Sherman, who used to play cornerback for Seattle Seahawks, now plays for the 49ers, said the same thing. He went to Stanford. They'll all say the same thing. I don't know. They used to put a report out on the graduation rates of a lot of these schools of football and basketball players. And, of course, the ones that graduated the less, of course, were us, American Africans, black folks, you know, and a number of reasons. And the number one reason to me is because of their time put in to the sport, that the reason why they're at that school. That's the reason why they're there. It's like I said, I give Calipari of Kentucky, who signed a big contract, multi-million-dollar contract for the University of Kentucky. But he did tell the parents, says, hey, I'm not here to tell you that your son's going to get a great education. This is the finest school. They have the best physicists. They have the best biology. They have the best this, that, or the other. No. He says, I'm going to prepare your son to get drafted in the NBA. Because if your son gets drafted, he'll get paid. If he doesn't get drafted, hey, who knows? He may make it. He may not. Just saw a piece on Dwight Bikes. His brother played football for me as a little kid. In fact, I remember when Dwight Bikes came up there, you know, scrawny little kid to try to play. He worked out a few times, realized it wasn't him. Basketball was his thing. Well, he now plays for the Detroit Pistons. They signed him to a full contract. Very glad for him. Very, very glad. Also seeing some stuff that's some on the internet that somebody sent me back about basketball in Milwaukee. Or in the state of Wisconsin, the same old that has happened. I don't know about your state, but I know in Wisconsin, they have had a history of schools from Milwaukee or schools that have a dominance of American African players being cheated when they go upstate to lesser talented Caucasian schools. And so I've heard it from a few people. Some could argue that it's sour grapes or whatever it is, you know. So it was a close game. But they were cheated. And believe me, it's happened. And, of course, it continues to happen. You know, but Dwight Bikes finally made it to the NBA, and I'm congratulating him. You know, just like the young man that hit the shot for Michigan. Jordan Peele. No, not Jordan Peele. That's the brother who wrote Get Out. Jordan Poole. In fact, on the news this morning, they said that somebody mentioned it was Jordan Peele. And Jordan Peele tweeted back or commented back. Yeah, he's been working on his jump shot. I'm glad I've been working on my jump shot so it can come through at the right time. So he congratulated Jordan Poole. But Jordan Poole is from Milwaukee. He went to Rufus King High School, the same school I went to. Congratulations to him. And good luck to Michigan. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, join us here. Give us a call, 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're going to talk about this fantastic weekend that I felt was just on point. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspective here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. On Mondays also, Diamonds, Acres of Diamonds this evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And following that was Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family-Centered Economics, from 9 until on Thursday. On Friday, 8 p.m. to until, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Sports Talk, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And on Sunday evening, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. The Power Summit, the Ulu Power Summit, was outstanding. On Friday, we had a meet and greet at the cafe, Cafe Ulu, which of course is 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta, in Sylvan Plaza. And we had a good number of brothers and sisters who came there and fellowship with the Ulu members from all over. My good brother Madike from Senegal, who lives in Ireland, Scotland, and brothers from California, all over. And it was a great on Friday. Saturday morning, we had our members meeting at the cafe and took care of good business. But it was the summit on Saturday afternoon, which was outstanding. The great presenters who gave us a lot of good information. Brother DJ kicked it off, who gave us information about what's up with Ulu. And of course, the fact that when we started Us Lifting Us as a cooperative, we were talking about it and we're talking about it. And we finally said, hey, let's do something to let the brothers and sisters know this is just not theory. We just ain't talking. This is practical. And so with the money that we had collected, we put a good portion of that money, not all of it, but a good portion of that money into establishing the cafe. And if anybody has a chance, you can go online. You can go to usliftingus.com or go to cafeulu.com, CAFEULU.com. But I suggest that you go to usliftingus.com/summit. 2018, so you can hear for yourself, which was live streamed this past Saturday. You can hear the percentage. You can hear Anthony Rice with Bees. Bees is Black Economic Empowerment System. The brother has a system. He talked about how it works, talked about how it has provided many of our brothers and sisters with economic opportunities and planning and so forth, entrepreneurship and whatever. Because the theme of our summit was models of cooperative economic empowerment. And that's what we talked about. That's what was presented, models of economic empowerment. So we talked to Brother Anthony Rice, presented outstanding presentation. Then our brother talked about Bitcoin. And although Bitcoin is going through some stuff right now, but he said, hold on to them. It's a fluctuation up and down. I think the fact that it is a currency that's over the internet does make it tenuous at times. Somebody said that their dealing in Bitcoin was backed up by petroleum, oil. That's what Venezuela's currency is backed up by, oil. You know, to me, currency should be backed up by something. But of course, here in America, And in the world, the currencies are manipulated and dominated by the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and international bankers. Just like people believe that the Federal Reserve is not governmental. The Federal Reserve is the bankers, the international bankers. And they determine what happens with the money. They raise and lower interest rates. They fluctuate things, not the government. Although the government will appoint somebody, but it is like they appointed the lady when Barack was there, when Ben Bernanke, I think, was done with his tenure or just wanted to quit, whatever. Paul Volcker, all the other folks who have been the chairman of the Federal Reserve. But, of course, Trump got rid of her and put in whoever his guy is now that's ahead of the Federal Reserve. But that is run by international bankers. And so what makes the currency legit? What makes it happen? Let's keep it real. The power to kill you. The military might of those who say it is. Because, they took the currency off gold decades ago. I think when Nixon was president. And because of the influence that they have across the world. And even though other countries have their own currency, now they're still being controlled by these international bankers. In fact, in Africa, the only ones they didn't have control, only country they didn't have control of was Zimbabwe. And now they do. So they dominate. It's like a cartel on money. Just like they established a cartel, the Mideastern countries, if you want to use that term. I don't like that term, Mideast. But those countries formed a cartel and dealt with all the other countries in that way. So, Bitcoin was interesting discussion. Like I said, the brother who was dealing with it says, hey, hold on to him. I mean, at one time, there were some folks with a decent investment, decent meaning thousands of dollars, who turned that into hundreds of thousands. If you invested even much bigger into Bitcoin, you even probably had a million. But now it's devalued. And they're saying, just wait a minute, it'll come back. We'll see. But to me, the best presentation, and Brother Rashad Nuri, I'm going to talk about him with urban agriculture. He was outstanding as well. You know, was Peter Brown and Brother Yancey Johnson with the Ledge Group. And I'm going to play something from them. Also, too, our chairman, Brother DJ, talked about Ulu and the formation of Ulu and what's happening. Did an outstanding job as always, you know, because the model for us is Ulu. The economic model for us as African people, because that's the kind of people we are. We are a communal people. We are a collective people. I often said, Europeans, individualism is a European Caucasian desire. I'm the individualist. It is about me. It is I. I think for, therefore I am. Individualism is a European Caucasian desire. But collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must. It is how we will survive. It is how we will thrive. It is how we will be players on the world stage once again through our collectivism, through our control of our resources and our control of our land. So DJ eloquently stated the Ulu position. And like I said, then Brother Rice talked about B's, Black Economic Empowerment System, that is collect. And then Brother Peter Brown of the Ledge Group spoke about what they are doing in Africa. The things I've said on this program, it was good to hear that it is being done, as small as it is. But something small grows into something large. Just like I say, if you plant an acorn, and an oak tree will grow. And you know, an oak tree is huge. An oak tree will uproot concrete. It's going to grow. It'll push it up. And so out of something small, of what they're doing on the continent, in Kenya and other places, is huge. I'll play a little bit of Brother Peter Brown and talking about coffee, which of course is what Ulu's interested in, and we were talking with him about that, because we want to get coffee directly from although we have coffee from Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, another country as well as Brazil, but it would be great to get that whole, and we can roast it ourselves because it'll be a lot cheaper. We can roast it ourselves and grind it ourselves. See, that's what's good about that. So I'm gonna play this piece. He's gonna talk about coffee and what they're doing in Africa. This is Brother Peter Brown.
He passed away, and his family didn't take care of the farm. And so the result is you have hundreds of acres of coffee that here, it's going bad on the vine. What you're looking at is millions of dollars worth of coffee, right? You break these beans open, and inside there's two beans, and that is your coffee. This is all a plantation full of coffee. Ledge members, here's what I'm proposing. And this is what the parliament has suggested to us, is that they parcel this land off. The same way that we're leasing land in Rumuruti, they want to parcel this land off to the farmers here. And the farmers take care of these fields and create their own profit. What this does is it necessarily lifts the economy of these people to a place where they are viable and solvent. If we can endeavor to get farmers here involved in these fields, we instantly create generational wealth for these people. So, what do we do? How does this look? It looks like we give an acre to every farmer that wants to work, and they all do. We give them that acre, and their families work, and they eat, and they have viable, good jobs. On the other end, that coffee comes to you, legends, and you now have exclusive access to this coffee to distribute it everywhere in the world. And so what it does is it has the effect of lifting the African in the diaspora and lifting the African in Africa, and we grow in unison. This is important. We're looking at millions of dollars on this acre. But when I say billions, I say that because you've seen the amount of land that is available here in Kenya. And so and the coffee farmers have had their product devalued by way of the cartels. So this is why they leave it on the vine, because they're not making any money. Because the cartel has a lock on what they're going to get for their coffee, the farmer is not making any money, and so he's not going to pay anybody to harvest this, and this is the result. This is a loss of economy. What you're looking at right here has the capacity to lift this region's economy single-handedly. Coffee is one hell of a commodity. It's second only to gold and oil. That coffee is the life's blood of so many nations. We have legends in the UK. We have legends in almost every state in America. We have legends in all of the coffee drinking countries in the world. So with that in mind, why wouldn't we find a way of partnering with these farmers and getting exclusive access to this coffee and distributing it around the world? You, my legends, will have that capacity. And again, bear in mind the peripheral effect. The peripheral effect is that we will be feeding
thousands of families here. We will be putting them to work. So we don't own this land, legends. This land belongs to or can be parceled out by way of the government. And so if they give 1 acre, 2 acres to every single farmer, we have just fed thousands of families. And what does it cost us? It cost us very little. So we invest in some manure. We invest in some fertilizer and get them the things that they need to make these fields viable again. And they're going to go to work. Why are they going to go to work? Because it's their livelihood. They need to eat. And so they're going to go to work and they're going to produce the best coffee that they possibly can. They've been doing it forever. They know this business, okay? So they're going to produce the best coffee possible, and we will have exclusive access to be able to distribute that. So in one fell swoop, you will make money. If you are not yet a legend or you're only a hero and you're trying to make your donation up, guess what? You can do so on the coffee. And at the same time that you're doing that, we are lifting the standard of a people. This field, this plantation has the capacity to absolutely turn around the economy for this entire county and make them prosperous and us prosperous at the same time. Is this what we've talked about all the time? Isn't this what the ledge was designed to do? To lift that man and this man and everyone in the middle and make sure that everyone eats? Wasn't this our focus? Look, we have the ability now to change everything. Everything. I know a lot of you have probably never seen coffee and how it grows. And so, again, we'll look at it. What you do is these beans come off the tree. And when you break one open, you find two additional beans. Well, I just dropped one. You'll find two additional beans, okay? And when you then split those beans, okay, you see that? Those two beans. You then split these beans, and inside of that is what they, after this is dried, you crack this open, and the beans inside of that are then dried and roasted. And that is where coffee comes from, okay? Well, again, look at how much coffee is sitting on these vines. If you look, this is 100 acres of land. It's all grown. The coffee is trying to do its thing, but they haven't taken care of it. So what do they need? They need the ledges. They need the ledge group. They need fertilizer. They need amendments to the soil. They need to have a purchaser on the other end. That's the key. They're not going to do this if they don't have anyone to buy it. The cartels are holding them down. I suggest that we can step in. We can fuel this. We can take that coffee, and we can increase our economic standard at the same time that we do theirs. My brothers and sisters, this is what I came to Kenya to do. I told you I was going to come drag every single thing I could back to you. And that is exactly what I'm doing. So I was blessed to have audience with a member of parliament. And it was an amazing meeting. And this is what it was we discussed. So here I am on a plantation here in Kenya. And I'm inviting you legends to let's really make some changes and really change the world. That's what we're here to do. We're here to change the world and make sure that everybody eats. So thank you all. All right, we're going to talk about it.
That was Peter Brown from the Ledge Group. Ledge stands for Land for Environmental Development for Group Economics. They are doing this all over Africa. They're talking to folks in Ghana, Tanzania. They have done the work in Kenya. They even bring machinery in to help. I'm definitely considering talking with them. Definitely want to have them on the program, either Mr. Peter Brown or Yancey Johnson, his COO, to talk about what's happening, how people can become involved. Once again, when I talk about the unification of African people, and doing things with Africans and on the land of Africa, it is being done. What I'm talking about is not fairy tale, not a myth or sense of possibility. It is possible because it is being done. Let me see if I can pull something else that the brother talked about that is, you know, truly noteworthy. Because I believe we talked about some solutions Let's hear that.
Look at that mountain. Look at the expanse. The sheer amount of land available is simply staggering. It's absolutely staggering. And again, we in America have a problem. We are 48 million and have no power, no land, and no prospects to change the condition for the foreseeable future. Exactly what has to happen. Are we waiting for someone to come down from that mountain and save us? I mean, what has to happen before we do something to solve the problem ourselves? Building methods, right? Using efficient material. So, in the end, what we're going to do is we're going to lay this field out. We're going to lay all this land with homes for us. We're going to have our livestock. We're going to have our food grown here. We will have that water well dug, and we'll make our home up into the mountains. No one. Access to all of it, every single bit of it. Why wouldn't you use it? Why wouldn't you find a way to turn that profitable? Del Monte did. They're growing pineapples, and they're straight. Why wouldn't you? Why can't you? Why can't we? Look, this is what the Ledge Group is all about. You've seen us. We in Africa now. We came here to prove our words. We came to prove it. And here we are. Okay? I may get to the land again. Before leaving Nairobi, I may not. It's a long ride. 7 hours it took us to get here today. That's because we went during the work week, and there was traffic. It took us 7 hours to get here. So it can't take us 7 hours to get back. We don't have that kind of time. So we're jumping around a little bit. We're rolling in the safari vehicle all through Africa.
That was Peter Brown as he was traveling through Kenya and basically mentioning the fact that all of this land is prime, usable to grow plants and vegetables. And, you know, some of the things he talked about at the conference, you know, growing hemp, because of all the multiple faceted things that hemp can do. The strength of it, growing other commodities. All of those things now are a possibility. It's not just something that we talk about. It is happening. It is happening. Because the thing is this, brothers and sisters, if we do not get up out of this foolish mindset of us Americans, I ain't black. I ain't African. I'm an American. While we continue to suffer here, And every indicator tells us our situation is bad. I know that they put the 20% or 10% of that 20% in front of us, those entertainers and sports figures and all the wealth that they have, while our condition as a collective is terrible. And they do nothing about it. Even here in Atlanta. Here in Atlanta, there's more of us with wealth here than any other place. But yet here in Atlanta, it's the worst disparity between those of us who have and those of us who have not. And those of us who have, they do nothing with each other. We don't have one damn supermarket here that is ours that can compete with Kroger and Publix and whoever else. Not one. Even in those gated communities, cul-de-sac, subdivisions, or whatever that those brothers and sisters live in, they don't. They still got to go to the local mall or to the local strip mall or whatever that is run by Caucasians or somebody other than us. Because, see, America perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America's all about. And unfortunately, we fall prey. So the reality is this. This is not going to get better for us. It is going to get much worse. And at the same time, there's a recolonization on the continent by Chinese, by others, by the same Europeans that were there because of resources. If you listen to this program, always given the quote by Dr. John Henry Clark, Africa has always had something that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. The vibranium that we have in Africa is all the resources. And one of them is cobalt or coltan, which is being mined by little children, being exploited. I couldn't do this broadcast. You could not hear me do this broadcast if it wasn't for that. Because if without it, you don't have computers. You don't have laptops. You don't have tablets. You don't have cell phones. Now, of course, the makers, Samsung, all of them, Apple, all of them say, no, we don't get ours from child labor. We don't get our, they get it from the Congo. The vast majority of coltan is mined in the Congo. By little children. But it is the taking of the land by the Chinese and others. So now here we are, as African people, despised around the damn world. We have no friends, brothers and sisters. We have no friends. The European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege phenomenon is global. And it has affected everybody. Even though the Chinese are in Africa and being treated respectfully and well, but the Africans in China are totally disrespected, like everywhere else. Dark-skinned people on the planet, which we number in the vast majority of the people on the planet, are melanated. And many other people on the planet don't like melanin. They don't like that dark skin. The Indians in India, in that caste system. The Southeast Asians. When you see something from a place like Thailand or whatever, a good majority of the people are melanated. But yet you watch a television program or a movie or something like that, only light-skinned people Same thing in Brazil. They just killed a sister in Brazil. She was a councilwoman in Brazil, a strong advocate for the pervasive racism that has been going on in Brazil, where there are more Africans. Let me tell you, there are more Africans in Brazil than any country except Nigeria. Now, my good friend, Brother Renoko, who was on last week, Monday, he said there's more Africans even in India. But everywhere, we don't run a damn thing. We are so marginalized. And she was fighting for the brothers and sisters in the Fafalas. The Fafalas are the slums that are in the hills. See, unlike America, where Caucasians build in the hills so that all that scenery and all that kind of stuff. I remember in Washington, it was really bad. They were just rolling out of the hills because there was so much rain. The soil was loose and they had all these mudslides and so forth. And that just happened recently in California because of the fires that they had. After the fires, then they had some serious torrential rain. Well, there's nothing to soak up that, so you had all of these mudslides. You had boulders coming down on people's homes and cars and so forth. But in Brazil, the flatland near the Bay Area, you know, Ipanema, Copacabana Beach, all these, in that Bay Area where they see that big statue of Jesus, Corcovado, that's where they build the high rises on the flatland. It is in the hills where the poor people live. And she was fighting for them because she was also fighting for the young people constantly being murdered on the streets by the police and the authorities in Brazil. African people in the country of Brazil, the only probably place there's any kind of refuge, so to speak, where there's some treatment, decent treatment, is Salvador, Bahia. It's a place that I want to go to. I would not go back to Rio. I've been there, done that. I would like to go to Salvador, Bahia, where brothers and sisters are still practicing African spirituality. Yoruba, still practicing some customs and traditions. But the reality is we have no friends. Yes, they murdered her. They killed her. Because anytime, and I venture to say that's why, to me, the move we need to make is to go back home. And also, too, we're going to have to defend that. As much as some of us would think, well, they would love to send us back to Africa. To some of them, yes, but to others, no. Just think about the prison population and the rise in private prisons. And once Barack, when he was in, he put a slam on them. And so they were losing money. They had contracted with the states. And they told the states, if this prison is not this much percentage full, whether it's 80, 85, 90, 95, whatever that percent, then you will pay. The state will pay. Oh, they were bullies. I mean, this is what they did in Wisconsin. They told the state. They got the land. They built a prison on it. And then they told the state, you want this prison because you need this prison. You're going to buy this prison. The state said, no, we're not going to do that. We don't deal like that. Oh, guess what? Exactly. The state acquiesced. They bought the prison. It's a maximum secure Boscoville prison building. Prison labor, mass incarceration. Then, as Sister Michelle Alexander stated, the new Jim Crow. Or the Caucasian, Slavery by Another Name, which was a good documentary, a good book and documentary on PBS. Slavery by Another Name, the peonage system. When you could just be taken off the prison just for, so what they might say is loitering. What, you got no place to go, boy? Here you go. Throw you in jail and then farm you out to a railroad, to a mine, or to some of the working farm. Farm you out. And, of course, they had a commissary. Got to have something, some cigarettes, some candy, whatever it is. And because they said, no, you You know, you still, oh, you got to be here. And you're there for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, just like movie Life with Martin Lawrence and Eddie Murphy, one of my favorite movies. But it was sad because it's real. They just died there. People lived there and died there, stayed there and died. They didn't live. They existed. They just died. And considering what's going on in the continent with all these people, my suggestion, and I'm going to continue to do this, is we go home, that we take Africa as American Africans working with the Africans on the continent, like the Ledge Group is doing. They are working with our brothers and sisters to develop the land so they can have employment, so they can have food. They are working. It is being done. If you want to join this conversation, please do. 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. So I know there's a lot of us that don't want to go back, and believe me, I understand that. But I would hope that you support it. I would hope that you defend it. Brothers and sisters, Malik El Shabazz said it best, we will never be respected until Africa is under the control of Africans. We will never be respected as a people in this world until Africa is in control of Africa. The Chinese are so deep there. They're in Uganda, they are marrying African women. It ain't no damn love affair. They are marrying African women to stake their claim. The offsprings of that union will make that claim for them. Everybody's taking over. I love what happened in South Africa. I love what happened in Zimbabwe when they told the Caucasians, this is our land. You will get off of it without compensation. When you came here, there was no compensation, because when you came here, you took it and you killed for it and you killed to maintain it. I would like to think that in this world today, I am not naive. Believe me, brothers and sisters, by no stretch of the imagination am I naive. But I would like to think in the world today that a claim can be justly made and be honored through the world body, the UN or whatever. But I know that's not the case. But it should be done. Because what's happening right now in West Papua New Guinea, the Indonesians are killing those dark-skinned brothers and sisters in West Papua New Guinea for their land. There's no way in the world today that things like that should happen with the technology that we have. Many years ago, that would happen. You wouldn't hear nothing until later it was revealed or somebody. No, but today you can see right now what's going on in West Papua New Guinea at this very moment. You can see what's going on in the world, period, everywhere. So why does evil, why does all these things continue to persist? Because the dominant force in the world is evil. The dominant force in the world is European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. And so the Caucasians in stolen land, which is now they call Australia. They stole that land and almost put the indigenous people, who they call Aborigines, to extinction. And so they said, well, if these South Africans' land are going to be taken without compensation and they're going to be this, that, and the other, it ain't like they're going to be threatened. No, you just ain't got no land. You can work for the brothers and sisters. How about that? But no, they said, we will offer you refuge. We're going to come up with a special immigration policy where you Caucasian people whose land has been taken from you can come here to Austin. I'm surprised that the U.S. didn't make that offer to these Caucasians. I know that they wouldn't make it for those Africans who are in Libya, who are being sold into enslavement. That's right. But they come from Africa, right? These Caucasians, they come from a shithole country. Yeah. So I'm saying, brothers and sisters, support what Ledge is doing. Support anything that any of us are doing on the continent to bring our people together. We cannot, as a people, afford to lose the continent to all these outside sources. It is our homeland. It is our foundation. It is who we are. No, brothers and sisters, we've been here 400 damn years, and our condition 400 years has a people. I ain't talking about a few folks who got some money. I'm talking about us collectively. It's worse today than even when it was 30 years ago. And that's ridiculous. Caucasian lady lost her job the other day because she said, we're just not smart enough. Some university professor, some Caucasian lady. And because they never factor in all of the racist practices. Just an article said that American Africans with some wealth, their children don't do any better than Caucasian high school graduates. Here they are with degrees and so forth. We know this information. It is there. It has been there. The question becomes, what are we going to do? Number one, there's nothing that we can do to change the dynamics in this country. We have more people. If you think legislation and voting is going to do it, we have more people in political office today than we've ever had. And our condition is worse. We have more people in politics on a local, state, and federal level. And yet, the Congressional Black Caucus, hell, they couldn't even say nothing to them European Jews because those European Jews give them money. So they couldn't say anything when they attacked at Farrakhan and said, if you support Farrakhan, if you don't denounce him publicly, then you may not get what we have to give you or offer to you. And those Negroes is like, yassa. Farrakhan is anti-Semitic. We do not support him. We do not deal with him. He's anti-Semitic. And he spews hate. Now, I like what Jay said on our program the other day. And he said it last night, when Malik Zulu Shabazz, who was a member of the Nation of Islam, I don't know if he's still a member of the Nation, I don't know that. I know he worked with Khalid Muhammad to revive the new Black Panther Party. But he was saying about Farrakhan, he said, you know, Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, in all the years that he has had the nation, has not done what Elijah Muhammad did 30, 40 years ago. They had businesses. I remember the businesses in my community in Milwaukee. You probably remember some of those businesses yourself 40 years ago. So, you know, because I know they're planning a conference in D.C. Well, I'm going to be in Baltimore. I may try to shoot over to D.C. Drive down there. There is a conference that they're having in a four-day conference where they're going to be talking about each day is going to be a different focus of economics. They even have one on reparations, you know. So I'm going to get the details of that, and I'll be announcing that as well. So, yeah. But this situation will not be changed.
This call is being recorded.
Until we change it, it is up to us. Nobody else. It is our responsibility. It is up to us as African people to change this. Nobody else. And if you're looking for somebody outside of us, you're a damn fool. And even the people within us must be properly vetted, because these Asian provocateurs, all of these Negroes, these Negro peons. Because right here, right now, our situation is very tenuous. That's why I really appreciate what Ledge is doing, how they presented what they were doing. The fact that they're on the ground doing it is encouraging beyond belief. There's another piece on the Ulu Power Summit, and that was Brother Rashid Nuri. Brother Nuri had worked with the Nation of Islam way back in the day. Now he just does urban gardening. And you can check him out on trulylivingwell.com. Trulylivingwell.com, where they do urban gardening. He's working now in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, and providing areas that have been where things have been torn down, and tilling that land and building all kinds of urban gardening centers where good, clean, wholesome food is being produced and sold. And that should happen all over. Although in Milwaukee, my good friend, Brother Will Allen, he lost his position. He lost his position. And it's sad to say, because Will Allen was a very good brother. He lost, why he lost it, I don't know. But, you know, we have a caller. Caller 646, go ahead.
Yeah, Hotep, Brother Ochi. This is Brother Jay.
Hey, Brother Jay, Hotep to you, dear brother.
Hey, listen, man, I want to say this right quick. In regards to my message last night, I stand by it 100%. But I don't want to cause any trouble whatsoever for Brother Elliot or Brother Richard. So if they're listening to this, I want to, first of all, apologize to them, because I know that there are people out there who are listening who will take offense to what I'm saying and blame Elliot and Richard for what I'm putting out there, because they just don't want to deal with the facts of the matter. So I just want to go on record, and I'll call up Friday or Sunday and speak to Brother Elliot and Richard and just let them know. But I also will say I stand by what I said. But, you know, there has to be a time and a place for me to say that. And I think that, you know, we're in a position right now to where, as like Brother Elliot said yesterday, you just have to work with people that you agree with and do the necessary things. You know, I have a history of over 30-some years in this thing, and I've seen what has gone on, and I got real serious issues with it. That's why I really don't get involved with too many organizations other than maybe financial support. I go out here and I mention these kids. That's what I do. I don't try to be a part, really, of organizations, because I think a lot of them ain't about what they practice nor they preach. So I just don't like dealing with it no more. But, you know, like this thing you talking about with the coffee, if there's an opportunity to invest money in it, that's what I like to do. I like to just invest money, try to move that forward. But as far as, you know, the day-to-day operations and all that stuff, man, I'm past that stage. Because when I did that, I saw the dysfunction in it. I saw the dishonesty in it. I saw the treachery in it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I got a bitterness about it. And that's why I said what I said about Sister Tamika Mary. Because my history is, I was right there with Sister Soldier when all of that went down, and I saw what, you know, Jesse Farrakhan Butts all of those cats did to that system.
That's right. That is right.
So the thing mm-hmm. is, you know what I mean? That sister at that time was the most powerful sister out there. And she would have been a lightning rod to educate a lot of our sisters.
That's right.
Because, you know, if you ever take the time out, and I do this with most young people, she was on the Phil Donahue show. And there's a clip of her on the Phil Donahue show explaining what her position is. And I show that to every kid that I deal with because it's a clarity in that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And to have a sister be able to articulate that to other sisters is a powerful thing. That's why you don't have too many sisters out here articulating what's going on. So whenever you find a sister that has that ability, we have to support them and we have to push them. You know what I mean? And yeah, I have issues with Valerie because, you know, there's just something that I feel she's not clear on, and I have some issues with her association. But I have more issues with an individual like a Sharpton, who was basically her mentor, was basically the person who put her in the movement, that doesn't stand up and defend her at all costs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're supposed to be in the front of the public on your radio show, on your TV show, telling all of these crackers, back off of her.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
For sure.
That's what I'm about. That's how I deal with these type of things. So I just want to tell Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, I apologize if I placed them in any uncomfortable position because those are two good brothers. Those brothers are doing things in the community that we're supposed to back and support. And I'm not going to do anything at all to hurt them or put them in a position to where as they're going to be attacked. So I won't do that no more. Now, I may say something on your show because I feel you got a little more backbone and you're not afraid of being attacked on that level. You know what I mean?
Listen, Brother Jay.
I'm not going to do that, brother.
Brother Jay. I give less than a rat's ass at this stage of the game of our people. I'm telling you. You know, the only thing that they can do to me is cut this off. And could they poison me? Could they kill me? Yeah, of course they can. Yes. But into that time, I'm going to speak this special truth for us and our people because I'm trying to help put something on the minds of our people. Stephen Biko is correct. The most potent weapon that Cracker has is the minds of us.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
I'll say this. I'm not trying to make it seem as though Brother Richard and Brother Elliot is scared because I feel in a sense that they have the same position.
They
but
do.
They just don't want to be in the position to have to take that position because they deal on a different level. It's like I associate with people that associations are different than others. It's just like Brother Richie goes to ASCAP. There's a different sort of people that go to ASCAP that may go to the Nation.
Oh, no
or
doubt.
May go to NED or something like that. It's the ideology, the political ideology is a little different. So, you know, I have to be respectful to Brother Elliot and Richie because you know something, I really respect those two brothers greatly. Or if I don't respect you, I don't deal with you. Because there's just shows I would call up on. But I feel as though they're trying to put forward a special message for our people just like you. Because the one thing about you, I know, Brother Ocean, you're 100% African. And you like me, you don't give a damn. Because we don't live our lives. We understand what this is about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all about educating the people now until you leave the planet.
That's right.
So I'm not
I'm
scared of nothing as far as I'm concerned because I've lived a good life.
Yeah.
I have no complaint. You know, I'm at the point as long as I can get up, you know what I mean? I got a place over my head to sleep. I don't care about nothing else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I done did basically all that I wanted to do. But no, I just want to go on record, and I'll say it nation, I feel you're supposed to be able to take care of your people on all facets of their existence. You know what I mean? I got an issue with anybody that's in a position to where as they're supposed to be in the community, and they got fractured side going on, and you're supposed to be one of the baddest black men on the planet. You know, I'm just going to keep it real. Yeah. I can't be, you know, it's like Malcolm. Malcolm, I believe, would not allow that to go on in the community that he lived in. That's the, you just don't do that, bro. You're supposed to be willing to die for your community. You're supposed to have your community at a level to where as nobody will come in there and do anything that's not in the best interest of the community. Do you see that type of fratricide going on in an Italian community?
No.
In a Jewish community?
No.
In a Chinese community?
No.
Why is it we the only community that has that type of fratricide going on, and we supposed to have leaders living within that community and members within that community that's supposed to be the baddest boys in the black community? That's crazy to me.
That's crazy.
And I'm not going to be one of those individuals who are just not going to say anything about it and not question it. Because, listen, the bottom line, and I'll leave it at this, and this be my final point. If you were such a bad, bad, bad man, and this woo-hoo government hated you on the level that you proclaimed them to, based on history, and you know history, you cannot name me one so-called black leader that was a threat to the Nkrumah government of the United States that isn't in jail or dead. There's not one. There's not one who was deemed a threat. They're all dead or in jail. So you telling me that you, this type of special Negro, to be on the scene for 65 years and talking the talk you talk and be able to stay out of that position? Nah, bro. I'm a little smarter. I'm a little smarter than that.
I hear you.
You're more loving with it. But I know how I feel. This is what I feel your true position is. And I'll leave it like that. And, you know, again, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, I apologize if I put you in any sort of discomfort position because I respect both of you, brothers.
Right on.
Because I think you're both great.
I agree.
You too, Brother OG.
Thank you, brother. Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Hotep to you. We end this program like being all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Brothers and sisters, have a great, wonderful day. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana. Thank you. Peace, family.